decade, I spent practicing law in the mid-North Coast from 1980 to 1989. I met a number of people who had either been to Kinchela Boys Home or whose family members had been there, whether they were children of Kinchela Boys or brothers or whatever. And I came to learn firsthand, firstly about the Stolen Generations, because I hadn't learned anything about the Stolen Generations in my upbringing and education as a schoolboy in Sydney. And secondly, I learnt in particular about the experiences of the boys who were sent to Kinchela Boys Home, which of course was the largest of all of the boys' home facilities in New South Wales for the boys taken from their families, either as toddlers or as primary schoolers, as part of the assimilation policy that was in place for about half a century until 1970.
What were some of the experiences of these boys?
Many of them, I have to say, were not particularly forthcoming about their experiences. And in fact, in my speech this afternoon, following the speech of the Governor, Professor Marie Bashir, after she launches the book, I'll actually say that most of the detail I got from Sir Ronald Wilson's Bringing Them Home report into the Stolen Generations, that was a report on his Royal Commission in the mid-1990s on the Stolen Generations, because much of what all of the Stolen Generations, but particularly the Kinchela Boys, who had a particularly bad time because Kinchela Boys Home was, you know, in truth, purgatory, they kept bottled up, and they were only able to bring themselves to say what really happened to them before strangers in the Royal Commission. And accordingly, Sir Ronald Wilson's report sets out a lot more detail than you will get from them firsthand. And what happened after that, because they were able to get it off their chest, many of them then were more forthcoming in the latter part of the 90s when they recorded their experiences as part of the Stolen Generations Oral History Project, which was funded by the federal government. And in fact, the fellow who recorded those oral histories will be at the book launch this afternoon in Sydney.
One of the stories that struck with me is sadistic. It's nothing short of sadistic. He said when people got into strife, one of the boys said this, they would walk them down a line of 60 or 70 boys, they'd strip them off, and they'd have to be punched by every single child in that line, and if the other children didn't hit them hard enough, they themselves would walk the line.
Yeah. One of the things that happened at Kinchela Boys Home over the half century it was there, the extent to which it was purgatory was ameliorated. As time went on and inspectors increasingly came from Sydney, and having found terrible conditions, boys being physically and sexually abused, starved, lent out to the neighbouring farmers as slave labour and so on, conditions improved, but only because the inspectors started to carry out their inspections without warning rather than giving the superintendent of the boys' home warning. In the early days of the boys' home, walking the line, which was something that all new boys had to do, the actual blows were inflicted with sticks or broomsticks or mop handles or whatever, and it was only as time went on, it was really in the last 20 years of the boys' home, that walking the line meant you were only being punched or kicked. So one of the things that I've tried to do in the novel, Mick Marney, who's the principal character, he left the boys' home 3 years before it closed. It closed in 1970 and he left in 1967. His mentor and guardian in the boys' home, who he shares his cell with in Grafton Jail, Keg Hoban, who is about 20 years older, he'd left much earlier, so that you get a lot of dialogue after lights out in their prison cell about how conditions had improved, say, between the 1940s when Keg Hoban was there and the 1960s. So the reader is able to see how conditions improved over time because of increasing awareness of the government authorities as to what was going on there. I think the principal problem, from my understanding from talking to the Kinchela boys and their families and reading Sir Ronald Wilson's report, I think one of the principal reasons for the treatment of the boys, particularly after the Second World War and probably after the First World War, is a lot of the men who worked there, the superintendent and his attendants, the warders, were men who had been away to war and couldn't find work and were in effect men suffering post-traumatic stress syndrome. And they gave a lot of these men jobs looking after children in the Stolen Generations children's homes. And, of course, it was always a recipe for disaster to have men who had never quite got over the mistreatment they received at the hands of the Japanese or the Germans or whatever in the war, then looking after children and, in effect, perpetuating the mistreatment they had suffered in the war. So it became, in effect, a vicious circle.
Where are things at with regard to compensation, and how do the people you spoke feel about that?
Ground to a halt. That's one of the reasons we tried to time the launch of the novel as near as we could to the first anniversary of the launch at the end of October last year. It was a year ago last week when Her Excellency Professor Marie Bashir launched what is called the Kinchula Boys Corporation Strategic Plan. And that's a small booklet, in effect, prepared by some health professionals in the Department of Community Medicine in the Faculty of Medicine at the University of New South Wales in order to... rather than looking back at the history, it's looking forward and saying, what do we need to do to help the 100 surviving men from Kinchula Boys Home and their families? Because 500 of them have gone to a better place and they still have families who are in need. And so they published a strategic plan which sought to get them compensation, both monetary in terms of health, housing, and just recognition as to what they'd been through. And the governor launched it because she's a patron of the society, the Survivors Association, and that's, I think, the main reason why she's coming to launch my book today, because we're using this as an opportunity to say, well, a year has gone by and there hasn't been very much progress in helping these men or the families of the men who are no longer surviving.